This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com. The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Brighton Rock Podcast with me, Russell Guyver, and I'm welcoming onto the show for the second time our special guest, an Albion fan, but a filmmaker as well, Louis Miles. Welcome back to the podcast, Louis. How are you?
Yeah, always a pleasure, Russell. Yeah, very well. Just back from holiday and back to the heat here in the UK, which is a nice place to be.
Yeah, not too bad. I went to Peter's wedding on Friday and avoided the 34 degrees, managing to get to 24 degrees. That was a good strategy for my part. Not that it was planned, but It was a bit too hot that day. But yeah, and you have been amongst other places, I think, in Croatia recently for reasons we'll get into in a moment. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. Yeah, I spent quite a bit of time over the last year in Zagreb and Split and all around the country. It's a beautiful place to go. I'd recommend it to anyone.
Yep. And it's on my list, certainly, of places I want to visit. But the reason you're over there, or part of the reason, is because you've got a connection to it with your latest film. Now, we had you on before talking about Kaiser, about a guy who blags an entire career in South American football without really having any talent at all and feigning lots of injuries to manage to achieve his goals, knowing some people along the way. That's the general crux of that documentary. This time around, you focused on Croatia in a film called Croatia, Defining a Nation, which tells the tale of really the upcoming sensational team that they had in the 90s and the origins of that and what the backstory is. I've watched it in the last couple of days and think it's an excellent film, really, really good. So first of all, congratulations on it. But for those that haven't seen it yet, and that'll be many at this stage, tell us about it in more detail and how it came about, actually.
Yeah, thank you. The film's, as you say, about the 1998 Croatian team, and I think anyone who's probably 35 and over will remember that team and perhaps the 1996 team where Croatia was kind of announced to the world as a football side in that amazing tournament with their very striking red Czech shirts. And wonderful football. They were an absolutely brilliant side with some fantastic players like Zvonimir Boban, Davor Suka, Robert Brozinecki, Igor Stimac, Slaven Bilic, Robert Jani. The list goes on and on and on of world-class players. And it's a story that is very deeply connected to the wars that happened within the former Yugoslavian republics. For those of you younger age, they might not know, but there were a few states that were tied together in a place called Yugoslavia, Croatia, Slovenia, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Serbia, Montenegro, North Macedonia, and I'm probably forgetting some others, Kosovo, and like little automated republics as well. And it was held together as a kind of a socialist republic, effectively like a light form of communism. It was a very, very brutal war that happened there over the course of most of the 90s, but Croatia was involved in it in the first 5 years or so, as the republic split apart. And this story kind of tells the narrative of the breakup of Yugoslavia through the prism of football, and it's very deeply connected. Essentially, during Yugoslavia as a republic, you could not express your national identity. So you couldn't say, if you're in the UK now, fly any Welsh flag or any Scots flag and sing any Scottish songs or do anything like that. All of that was banned and it brutally repressed. But after the leader of Yugoslavia died, Tito, and he died in the middle of a football match, it took about 10 or so years for the forces of nationalism to rise up within the republics, and that happens through football. And then the wars happen and break apart. And it's very connected to football because the Yugoslav team was amazing and were always brilliant, never quite won something. They got like second in the European Championships, but they were always a brilliant team. The league was very strong. But through football, as you're a football fan, it's about the only place you could proclaim to be a Croatian. So if you supported Dinamo Zagreb or Hajduk Split, you could wave a Croatian flag and sing a Croatian song. And the people that wanted power in the breakup, like Slobodan Milosevic, Franjo Tudjman, they kind of force-fed all of their ideas through those football fans. And the players were involved as well. So, I mean, a very, very key part of the film and the entire story is a game between Hajduk Split and Dinamo Zagreb at Maximir Stadium, 3 days after the first elections that have, I mean, that there's a Croatian parliament. And there's an organised riot that takes place. The game never really takes place at all. And paramilitary leaders from Belgrade start attacking and causing a riot in the Maximir Stadium. And Zvonimir Boban, the eventual captain of Croatia, fly kicks a referee. And that kick is kind of considered to be the kick that started the war. I don't think it did. I think it was going to happen anyway. But there's a monument outside the stadium that says, for all those, consider this kick to start the war. And it's gone down in folklore there. So the players were very connected to the story of the breakup. And it's showing the breakup of Yugoslavia, the journey of these players from teenagers, really, in the early 80s, through to some of them playing for Yugoslavia, some of them not. The breakup of the Yugoslav side, and then the birth of Croatia, as it were, and how football was very, very, very integral in giving the nation an identity, which it absolutely has. And that moment when they finished third in 1998 brings so much joy to this new nation, because it's kind of like a release valve being taken off, you know. Although you'll never get rid of the brutal war that happened. And the memories of it, but you have something else to focus on, and those players are demigods, and they still are today. So that's kind of it's a bit of a lengthy explanation there, Russell, but that's kind of the three things, and the job what the film does is it kind of takes the narrative of everything and pulls it together and shows that how that was a key part of it. Of course, it's not the entire part of the war. There's lots that goes on for there, but still very relevant.
Yeah. Only in the documentary they do it's mentioned that the Yugoslav team had its factions, and we're not talking about Man United and Liverpool players in a Sven-Göran Eriksson style scenario here. We're talking about obviously Serbian factions, Croatian factions, and how that was often hindrance to the national team, and maybe one of the reasons why they didn't quite get those extra step to win a trophy. But I think Slaven Bilic is one of a number of the key players, literally or metaphorically, of the time. Is interviewed at length as well, and I think it's him that says you can't separate football from politics; they are indelibly linked. And obviously, that's with a slant towards his particular part of the world. But I think it's probably true, certainly to an extent, even now, as we're seeing with sanctions on Russian players and that sort of thing.
No, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. But I found it, a number of things I really liked about the film. I think it's crystallized a few things I already knew, but it certainly educated me on a lot of other details. I hadn't really thought, for example, that there was the four main clubs, wasn't there? I think two Serbian, two Croatian, who were the...
Yeah, so you have the Hajduk Split, Dinamo Zagreb, Partizan Belgrade, and Zvezda Red Star Belgrade are the four big teams that won those things.
Yeah. And they obviously played a big part in influencing what went on. And I think it's interesting to get a lot more of the background and some of the details along those lines. What I also liked was it was beautifully shot. I think the interviews are done in very kind of pristine ways. But equally, I loved seeing, I think there was even some Super 8 footage, wasn't there, early in the documentary, and some other older footage as well in other formats, as depicted. It intersperses political speeches and other conversations and actions that were going on at the time with obviously loads of footage of Croatian and Serbian football, or Yugoslav football, a lot of which we wouldn't have seen before, I don't think. Mm-hmm. And I really like the intertitles where you've got sort of players' names in a sort of like an animated. They're really good. So,
that's all thanks to a wonderful designer called Sara Nesterik, who I worked with 10 years ago. And then she went off and did a PhD at Huddersfield University, so it was off the market for a long time. And this is her first gig back, and It was weird when this came around. I thought she'd be the best for it, because we did a lot of work in Ukraine around 2012, and she's part Ukrainian, so I knew she would really research the stars and all the rest of it, and you know, she nailed it first time. And I'll send you the poster as well. I mean, she's done a great job on that. Just looks fabulous.
Yeah, that's terrific. Yeah, I mean, it's a great looking film. I think it's very interesting. There's so much detail in there, which I certainly didn't know either much or anything about before. Mm. So I think it's very educational, but it's very entertaining. It flows nicely. And I think that era and that particular part of the world is a fascinating segment of history. I think it really was the backdrop of this conflict, this brutal, bloody conflict, the way football was used. We should mention also... there's four sets of ultras who are emerging at this point as well in the story. And they are, I think, at the heart of a lot of what's going on as well, aren't they? Some brutal kind of...
I mean, we didn't want to get too far into it in the film because it's not, you know, it is a truth, but not the complete truth of what went on. But a lot of the fans who fought within those walls were made up of football supporters. Mm-hmm. They were the ones that were sent to the front lines. So, you know, very, very key all the way around. And as you say, it was a very incredibly brutal war. The siege of Vukovar is the longest siege since Stalingrad. And I think that remains true to this day because the sieges in Ukraine seem to be shorter. So, obviously lots of parallels with what's going on at the minute in terms of the themes behind the war, why the war's happening. And then also just as a PR game as well. I mean, this is war's incredibly brutal and horrible, but tactics-wise, how towns are kind of sacrificed, but then also how countries are promoted. Zvonimir Zelensky has said to all of his football players that they must go to their clubs and fly the Ukrainian flag. And that's exactly what happens in this film. These top players. You've got to remember, the kind of an interesting facet to all this. The Yugoslavian League was very, very strong because you could not leave the country or the federation until you were 28. So you had these amazing players who could never play outside Yugoslavia until they're either at their peak or just past it. But what happened as a result of the war is that the likes of Boban, Suker, Stimac, Binic, all the rest of them went at the age of 22, 23. And so then they played for, you know, AC Milan, Real Madrid, Prozanetsky played for Real Madrid and Barcelona, you know. And then all of a sudden you've got these incredible players that you probably wouldn't have come across your radar before, unless there was a cup winners' cup match or something. Now everyone was seeing these players all the time, and their job was to promote Croatia. That was their number one aim. Goran Ivanisevic was the same. Ivan Majoli as well, a tennis player. They were given special permission not to fight in the war, instructions from Dr. Tudjman, the leader of Croatia, to go and promote their country and to say all the right things.
There's some incredible characters in this film as well. I can't remember exactly his name. Is it Blazemic, the manager?
Chiro, yeah. I mean, he's amazing. He is genuinely one of the... He gave me a massive life lesson, I think. We interviewed him 2 days after he finished chemotherapy, and he's on his third cancer now. And he wanted to do this interview because he knew that it was going to go. A few films have been made sort of on this board, but for a local market, whereas this has been... you can get this anywhere in the world now. We did the interview with him. He was great. And the thing is, what we realised, that he's an absolute charm. And this so for those who don't know who Chiro is, he was the manager of that 96-98 side. And he came to sort of become a national celebrity within Yugoslavia by winning the 82 championship with Dinamo Zagreb. And it's the first time they won it in 25 years. Usually the Serbian clubs won it because the league was fixed. They were just so good that year. It was so amazing that they won. And he was just always a massive character. But we found out that he was a charmer, and he would say everything to make you feel good. Almost at the first time you meet him. So our Croatian producer is a lady called Anna Muha, and she was a correspondent over here for all Croatian news, so she knows a lot of people in politics here and all the rest of it. But he looked at her, and the first time he met Anna, he said, "I've seen you on the telly so much, my dear, but you are even more beautiful in person. I am astonished by your beauty." And we did the interview, and he sat down next to me, and he was smoking his cigar, and he turned to me, and he looked at me, and he said, "You know, something about you reminds me of Fellaini, the film director. You just have this certain aura about you. You're just fantastic." And he would say this to everyone. I mean, like every story of a cheerer would be, what did he say to you to make you feel good? Journalists would say at the age of 21, it's like, "I've already noticed that you're the hardest working journalist in the room. Let me buy you dinner. And like, I want to know how you've got such talent at such a young age." And he would just do anything to get you anything to anyone. He would find something straight away. And the first thing he says is positive. But through that, he created this amazing bond with a lot of big egos, right? I mean, that team, you know, it's 96-98 team, you're dealing with top players with a lot of personality, but also very strong-willed. I mean, you know, they're very political. You know, Boban fly kicked to Coppa, and became a symbol for the breakup of Yugoslavia and spoke out a lot. These are people that don't hold back. You know, they have huge egos, and he was the only one that could really hold them together. And they still love him. We had a premiere in Zagreb about 3 weeks ago. And we had the current first team over there, so Kovacic and all the rest of it were there. A few people couldn't make it. Boban couldn't make it because he was working for UEFA, and Stimac and Asanovic were coaching their teams. But the ones that were there, it was like watching a father with their son. It was amazing. I've never seen such a bond. And I should imagine it'd be a bit like that with Fergie and his team, but except I'm not sure he'd be quite so, you know, cuddly. But it was he was just amazing. And like everything he said was, you know, I mean, I think one of the first lines in the film, we introduce him and we build up this myth of Chiro, and the first thing he says was, "My mother wanted me to become a monk, so they sent me off to a monastery. But I fell in love with a nun, and I was like, 'Mama, I cannot be a monk. I have to become a football coach.'" and then off he goes. So incredible, incredible character. Yeah.
And this team obviously came to its peak in the mid to late 90s. But there's a mention quite early in the film of a youth tournament, World Youth Championships, wasn't it, in Chile, or there was a match in Chile anyway, in Santiago, and the team went over and they were under various strict instructions.
Two of them
took quite a shine to the local girls, went out and came back up at 6 a.m. and the coach of that team got wind of it and ordered them home. And to show the great unity of the team, it says that the whole team just said, "Look, if they go, we're not playing."
So that was the 1987 Yugoslav youth team. And now Yugoslav are always a good team. They had a good team. But this team, as a few players couldn't play, a lot of the clubs didn't want them to go because they thought it was beneath them. Yeah. So you had a slightly more Croatian bias in the 1987 team. So out of the 11, 6 were Croatian, and normally you'd only get one or two. So there was just more creations. Prozhenetsky was in there, Suka was in there, Yanni was in there, Boban was in there, Steamatch was in there. Yeah, Steamatch as well. So it's six of the first 11 that were creation and some more on the bench as well. So out of a 20-man squad, you know, you're getting onto around about half were creation. So that was unusual. And they blew everyone off the park. I mean, you know, the first three games, they scored four goals. They beat an amazing Brazil side. And then they go on to win the title. Yeah, East Germany and then West Germany. Yeah. They beat the two Germanys, including like Matthias Sammer playing for one of them. And so a lot of these guys end up playing in 96, you know, when they're unified from both teams. Yeah. And they're just miles ahead of anyone. And it's kind of a major announcement to the world. Not least because, again, you know, unless Yugoslavia are playing in the tournament, people don't really know about any of these players because, you know, 80s, how are you going to get access to the Yugoslav League? You know, it becomes harder and harder. It's not like today where you can watch any match anywhere. And so they get known worldwide from that, you know, because it's so astonishing how good they are. And a lot of that team in 1987, those six, they all play in 96, 98. So they have this bond. And the ones who didn't play, like Slaven Bilic, I mean, he could never play for Yugoslavia because his father was a Croatian nationalist. He was involved in the Croatian Spring in 76. 71. And he's obviously a fantastic player, Slaven Bilic, an amazing player. But he should have been good enough to play for the Yugoslav team, but he never received a call. And he got told later on that his card was marked because of what his dad did. But all these players play with each other from a young age. And so from 12, 13, it's like the guy you go to year seven in the school. And then, you know, by the time you're 31 or whatever, you know, you're fighting for your new country and you're the idols of your country. And you know, you have to do a bit more. And that's where that's why it's a real band of brothers stories as well. And you see that in the footage. I mean, we talk about how good friends they are, but actually they do so much stuff together. There's lots of, I mean, Steamatch becomes a singer, you know, all the rest of it. But, you know, they all have their own chat shows, all this sort of stuff. They become such big iconoclasts. And it's lovely to see that bond. It really is.
Yeah. And that 87 team, there was a mixed team, a Yugoslavian team, formed the fulcrum of that team in the late 90s.
Exactly.
And as you said earlier, a superb team full of world-class players and really hit the peak, which they've not quite achieved again since, although obviously they beat us and got to a final in a World Cup not too
well
long.
I mean this is the thing. I mean, I spoke to Luca, couldn't make the premiere, but we saw him soon afterwards and he saw the film, and as far as he's concerned, they got to the final in 2018 because of that 98 team. And we say that at the end of the film, like, we hope we've inspired, maybe in 20 years' time we'll work out how good we've been. You know, they, I mean, the younger players didn't know much about it, but obviously Dejan Lovren, Luka Modric, those guys, Mandzukic, all the rest of them, they grew up with the 98 team. They're idols, and it absolutely has inspired them. I mean, we didn't get it in the film because you can't put everything in, but excuse me, we spoke at length with Slaven Bilic and Niko Kranjčar actually about how what it's like playing for Croatia, why is it different. And they all say, I mean, Bilic in particular, so he's obviously managed at West Ham and all these places. And he said, you know what, when international break comes around, you get a lot of players who actually aren't that keen on going to play for their national side. They'd rather have the time off or, you know, the rest of it. But no, that doesn't happen for Croatians. For them, it's going to seeing their best friends, and they're all going on, it's like they're going on holiday, and they all love it when they go there. And it's that special pride that still carries on, you know, to this day.
And in a certain way, it always will be. If it's coming from where it's come from, in this particular case, from a unified nation under the banner of Yugoslavia, you know, there's that sense of nationalism that comes out of that. And I think it's turned into a positive, obviously, in the way they used it. But you're going to have that strong sense of national pride, aren't you? And I think it really shows through. And as I said, a lot of good characters in there, and a really recommendable film. How did it come about in the first place in terms of your, you know, what was the genesis of the project?
Well, it came via Mark Pugh, actually. It's always been a story. It's always been a bit on the radar. But I do a lot of work with Mark Pugh, actually, these days. And we got a little company together. And we got wind that this new FIFA platform was starting. And they wanted different things. So this film is available on FIFA Plus. It's a new app that you can get on your phone or your desktop or your tablet. It's all free. Everything to watch on there is completely free. And it will be coming to TVs towards the end of the year. They sort of got it out early and ahead of the World Cup, so it's ready to go, and it'll grow from here. And their mandate was really they wanted to be kind of guardians of football storytelling. And I think they're kind of right, having made quite a few football films, amongst others. It's quite difficult to get really amazing football stories away as filmmakers. You know, yes, there are some that we all know, like the Maradonas or the New York Cosmos documentary or whatever, but they're few and far between. And a lot of what gets commissioned by certain streaming platforms is generally just focuses on who's the biggest name player that's around now and can we have a series around it because we know that the kids will watch it. And generally there's not story attached to it. And their bet was like, well, look, there's a space for this. We obviously hold the rights to a hell of a lot of archive. And so we can tell these stories. Plus we have, you know, ownership of quite a lot of the tournaments. So their remit was like, look, come with something different. And I like stories, you know, as you know, that have a, I mean, I couldn't make one of those films that's just on, you know, a person with no, I mean, obviously I could make it on, like if you could do a Maradona, but I couldn't do, you know, what's the one, I couldn't do a Pogba, for instance, which is the one that's on Amazon now, right? Yeah. Although I'd worked with him and I've done stuff with him, but like, you know, not in that film sense. So it was our bet that, you know, they would like to do this. And this is the first thing that they went for, I think, across the board, really. And they liked it because it was, you know, it's a story that they can tell. And they didn't, you know, given who it is and all the rest of it, there was no sanitation on it. I mean, there was at one point where we had to put more war in because they felt that it wasn't effective enough. Oh, in telling the story. And look, I mean, to take that another step further, I mean, we couldn't have got this away with the BBC, you know, or a local broadcaster here, because where's the need for it, for British society and the rest of it? So they have a platform, this story gets shown across the world, and it has been, and we're getting messages from all corners of the earth now. As more people become aware of it, I think they've soft launched the platform, and they'll get a big marketing push ahead of the World Cup. You know, it'll be there and people will watch it. And look, I mean, I can see the stats in the Croatia. I think practically the whole country's watched it already. So it's kind of remarkable, really. But it's great to be able to have the space to tell something like this. And look, I mean, I hope we've done the story justice. I think we have. We've had enough good messages from people that should be critical of this stuff saying that they think it's great. So, there we are.
Superb stuff. And just to clarify, so the FIFA Plus, this is FIFA's own launch. It's their baby, isn't it? And
yeah, very much so. I mean, obviously, you know, it'll be eventually sold elsewhere and all the rest of it, I should imagine. And then, you know, then we have joint ownership over it and that point of thing. But that's the thing. But yeah, I mean, they as the original commissioners of it, they... and look, I mean, as look, they have a PR job obviously to do, FIFA, and it's been really interesting. We had a screening with people like Tariq Panjer from the New York Times and Don McRae from the Guardian and loads of people, and quite a few people who are critical of lots of things that are on at the moment. And I think there's unanimous sort of like, well, more stuff like this comes out, it's only a good thing. Hmm. I think on the platform as well, and don't quote me on this, but there's loads of live games that are free to watch. So for say a nation like let's say the Croatian League, actually, I don't think the rights are sold in Europe for that. I think it's sold in various other places, but not in Europe. So you can watch the Croatian League for free on the FIFA app, or the Danish League, or whatever. So there's something you want to watch. It's there. It's on all the time. It's live, and they have all the archive of all the old World Cups. You can watch any game from start to finish. You can watch all those amazingly beautifully shot films that they do for each World Cup. They usually get like a famous actor to voice over it and all the rest of it.
They still are. They were always filmed on celluloid, weren't they? And they had that magical feel.
I mean, they're sort of filmed on digital cameras these days. I sort of think it's a job I got offered actually a few tournaments ago, and I couldn't do it. And I'd love to do it, but if I did get the chance, I would go back to film, because like the France 98 stuff, Russell, was just amazing. And there's just a certain quality that you get from it. And you said earlier the Super 8 stuff. I mean, that's all film stuff from Serbia, and they rescanned it for us and all the rest of it. And it's just like when you start dealing with proper stuff, it's just that there's that little magical quality that takes you, and you do get it with certain things. I mean, I largely shoot on Arri now, which is what a lot of the big films are shot on, and like all the stuff on that looks great, but there's still nothing quite like seeing the canister and the film burn and the it's still amazing. So anyway, all that stuff's available for free, and I think it's always going to be free. I think there's like an ad that pops up every now and again.
And Jaws is already available. It is already out.
It's already there. Yeah, it's already available. It came out on the 30th of May. So it's doing its thing now. It's been interesting because usually when you do this stuff, we did have a premiere, but we kept it small for a reason, all the rest of it, because there's a lot of football going on. But we felt we had to have the premiere on Croatian Independence Day. So we had, as I say, the Croatian first team there, a lot of the old team, the Croatian prime minister was there. We felt, it's the right thing to do that. Interestingly, it's one of those, and it's always the case with docs. I mean, like even the, unless it's something massive, like, an Isuka Capaldi thing that you can get the budget to do all the marketing, they start off slow. But usually there's a big film festival to go with and all the rest of it. But it's nice. I wake up every day to a few messages here and there from people who have like come across it, and there's more and more interviews being done and all the rest of it. It's going to become even more relevant ahead of the World Cup. The Croatian team are going to be watching it ahead of every game, they say. And a long chat to Mateo Kovacic afterwards. He knew about the story, obviously, but he'd never seen it properly, never been put together like this, and he was almost speechless. Borna Sosa, the left back, who's likely to go into the Premier League this year. He's like, look, I will make the team watch this ahead of every game, so we know what
was a hell of a tribute, isn't it?
But it means a lot to them, and it obviously does, because you talked about nationalism earlier. It's a very dangerous thing, nationalism. It can be, in this case, probably not. It's patriotism. It's a slightly different thing, and it's just love for the country. And there will be a massive pride of identity for those people, because the politics of that region go back thousands of years, and I think, as Winston Churchill said, the Balkans have more politics than they can consume, or more history than they can consume. But those national identities do go back a long, long way. So it's still relatively new, right? And unfortunately, the region's still unstable. So they will obviously, want to celebrate the good parts of it, of which the football team is clearly one.
Absolutely. Now, Louis, let's switch tack. Let's get on to the Albion a little bit as we round off on this episode. First, one bit of news, actually. Young Benicio Baker Boati, I think that's pronounced, who we had on loan for one of our youth team levels second half of last season, has now signed on a permanent deal. I guess he's going into the youth ranks again, or out on loan somewhere. But we're clearly impressed enough with him. So that's one bit of Albion news since we were last on. In terms of the season, though, I mean, we've obviously been chatting to you. I can't remember what it was now. It must be a couple of years ago, probably, or a year and a half.
I think it was April last year.
Oh, was it? Yeah, there we go. So we've had the whole season since we spoke to you. And what do you make of it? Records broken. highest position we've ever finished. Fantastic. Some entertaining football. And we managed to get some goals. Still not perfect in that regard, are we? But I think an improvement on the previous season. How have you found the season? And what are your highlights and lowlights?
Well, I think the highlight has very clearly got to be Manchester United game at home, I think. My parents had come up from Plymouth for the weekend, and so I'd taken them to the game. And it was, you know, for all of us that had been there through the 90s, you know, could you have dreamed of smashing a team, especially in the 90s when the United was so dominant, you know, and I know they're not as good, especially at the moment, as they were, but, you know, it won't take much to fix United, I don't think, you know, a lot of, it's just a bit of attitude, isn't it? Yeah. And a couple of players out. And so that was, you know, a remarkable, and it could have been five or six, couldn't it, really? So that was, you know, that stands long in the memory. I mean, I did like Spurs away. I sort of snuck into that one. I was filming on another project near the ground. And I was supposed to go up to see my in-laws straight away, but managed to get a ticket in the home end, right in the middle of that big stand that they have. So I had to pretend to not be a Brighton fan, you know, and then hear all the groans when Brighton scored and all the rest of it. Of course, that game was probably the one that sealed it for Basuma going to Spurs, because him and Caicedo, they were amazing. So those two, the ones that clearly stick out. But look, I mean, I think you kind of said it in the intro, really. We were brilliant. We scored more goals. We still haven't scored. If we get anywhere near our XG or whatever it is, then, you know. And look, we're not that far away from the European place. You know, what are we like? You turn three of those draws into wins and you're in the Conference League. You turn five of them into wins and you're in the Europa League. And, you know, I think that will come. I really do. I mean, we'll see what business gets done for the rest of the transfer window. I think they're signing this guy from Denmark today, aren't they?
That's the other application, yeah. I'll say his name. Is it Aridson, I think, or something like that?
Andigra, I think. I'm checking. Here we go. Simon Adingra. He plays for the Ivory Coast.
That's right,
look, here we are. There's... yeah, I mean, that looks like it's happening now, doesn't it?
Yeah, he's been today, hasn't
it? Yeah, exactly. So that's a very typical Brighton signing, isn't it? Yeah. Someone you haven't quite heard of, looks like he's very good. You know, play him, see how he goes. And look, I mean, I think it's taken a long time for this talent development to come into fruition. But, I mean, it was wonderful to see so many players break through. I mean, look, Tarek Lamptey is clearly the standout star of the season before. I mean, he was obviously good again this season, but, you know, he's not standout in the way that some of the others that have come through to have been. And we've still got people like Sarmiento to play, who looks like he's a real talent, but we don't know because he kept on getting injured. But, you know, I mean, he's playing for Ecuador for every game now, so he'll clearly get more of a run out. So it's only going to get more exciting, I think. And, like, you kind of have to pinch yourself, really, don't you, that... for me, I think, and before we came on this pod, we were chatting about Liverpool a bit. And for me, supporting someone like Liverpool would be really boring because you're always in the shout of winning something and, you know, there's an expectation. And I mean, to be fair, they took it with good grace, not winning the quadruple this year. But, you know, that being a Man City fan must be pretty dull. You know, you kind of know you're going to finish first or second every year, you know. Yeah. You can buy anyone you want, everything's a bit of a cakewalk. Whereas for Brighton fan, I mean, like, we play lovely football and it's exciting, but we're not, you know, it'd be nice to win something. I'm sure we will do one day, but, you know, the ride is kind of more exciting for me, you know.
It's exciting to get the recognition when we do get it, which obviously hasn't been amazingly forthcoming, being a club of a lower profile in the media's eyes. But I think that's gradually changing. We are now being regarded as one of the most progressive clubs in the country, I think. People are recognising our recruitment policy, our strategy, our modus operandi of, you know, development, sell high, buy low. As you said, people under the radar that people have never heard of more often than not. And it's a great model. It works well. And I think as long as you've got the right components in there to help that to smooth the smooth the wheels, which we have got, and I think we have succession planning to change that when we need to. If someone moves, we've got someone else to step in. We can keep holding those wheels, and I think it works as a really good model, I think. And for a club of our size, who's never really, barring a crazy oil-rich scenario in the future, we're never going to be in a top four, top six type of scenario, apart from maybe in isolation one time when we have a fantastic year, maybe. So we're in that next batch, and I think we're as good as anybody in the next batch at the moment.
We're not far off being as good as the top four, really. I mean, it wasn't last season. I mean, this season, I think it's probably a fair result of where we are, because I think when we did lose the games, that six in a row, or maybe a couple of them, you could have thought we should have got a point. But I mean, Burnley at home was dreadful, and I missed the Villa game, but it didn't sound like it was that much better. So we did have the stinkers. But the season before, I think it was so frustrating watching all those games, because we were so good for so many of the games that we lost, you know, and if you'd got what we deserved, we would have been fourth or fifth, I think. So, and look, this is the big thing. I mean, like, you know, we give these teams, I mean, I think we've beaten everyone now, the top six, haven't we, apart from Chelsea. And we should have beaten them twice last season. So, you know, and that will come. At some point.
I was going to say, speaking of Chelsea, and you mentioned Lamptey earlier, of course, came from there. He was indeed, you know, the real dazzler from the season before the one just finished. Mm. One has just finished. I think you voted in our poll for Cucurella, didn't you, as the top choice?
Was 100%. Yeah, 100%.
Just to say you won it. He's been absolutely magnificent, hasn't he? There is a possible threat he could go, but I'm hearing that there's a bit of a disparity between City and Albion's wants in terms of transfer fee. If that is the case, he may end up staying for another year or more. I would like him to stay another year, because I don't like that. I think this thing of building players up, letting them know they've got opportunities to progress with other clubs and step on is great, and selling one per year is great, maybe two, but I don't think it just feels too early to sell him now. We want to have another year from him, don't we? Because the talent is definitely going to escalate in his regard anyway. So I'd rather have just one more year with him, I think, just to link him more indelibly with us before he moves on.
I think, I mean, what an impact he's had. And I mean, look, he's had a real cut through, because all of my family, and some of whom aren't Brighton fans, know Cucurella and love him. You can just tell by the way he is that he's just a lovable character. And it's great to have to see him play. I mean, he's so good going forward, but he's also very good at defending as well. And I can totally see why, you know, someone like Man City would want him. The thing is, it would improve them. Do they need him? Probably not. I think, yeah. Look, I mean, he will obviously go one day. I think selling him now or next year is not going to make too much difference on the price, apart from it going up. Yeah. And look, I think he was the key for doing a bit better last season, because he was suddenly an outlet, yes, as opposed to. To be fair, Solly March did a fantastic job when he was in that position, and he still does play that position. But you know, Dan Byrne was a good tactic to put him on the left wing, but you know, he's not, you know, he could do one or the other, you know, he could be forward but he couldn't get back, and he could be back and he couldn't get forward. So look, clearly a standout player, and look, I mean imagine if he kept him. Yes, Bissouma's a big loss, but we all knew it was going to happen anyway. And I think it's, you know, good for him, good for the club. I don't think, I'm certainly not concerned about him going, in terms of obviously Caicedo is coming into that position and clearly play that very well. Jakob Moda was very good before he got his injury. I know that would take a while for him to get back, but he'll be in there. I think Pascal Gross signing is fantastic for the club. I think, you know, he proved his worth again this last season. I think he would fit into the best Albion teams of all time now, just the fact he's so consistent. So, you know, the midfield's kind of sorted. So we kind of, and so therefore we kind of know that we probably need that, you know, that striker. Which we might have with Undav, we might have with Mittema, we might have with all these players we haven't quite seen yet. It might already be there. But you know that there's a couple of little things. I think we might be, you know, we'll see see what the centre-back situation is like coming in. I feel like we could be slightly weakened there. But look, it's probably one or two more improvements now for the first team. For it to go to the next level, and yeah, clearly in the striking position, even if it's a striker or a number 10 or whatever you want to call it these days.
Yeah, it's exciting times of just where we're going to develop, how players are suddenly going to pop up and step on from the status they're at. It's there's all sorts of possibilities out there. It's great. I did hear Mr. Vickery, Tim Vickery, on I think it was on TalkSport this week, saying the only person that we've signed, he was convinced that Alexis McAllister would make the grade. He was convinced Caicedo would make the grade. And I think he also, he mentioned something complimentary about Sarmiento as well, but he said Enciso's the one he's less sure about because he's more of a slight frame. And I think it sounds as if what he says is true, that he's maybe not ready for the Premier League yet. It sounds as if Enciso may have to go on loan for a season, possibly to Belgium, possibly to a championship team. I don't know. But I guess we won't be expecting, if that's any guide, him to be involved this season. But we, as you said, we've got Undav in anyway, who has now become accustomed to you know, to some more first team football, and I think, you know, he's played with Mittema and Kozlowski last season. So if they're involved as well, they already have a bit of an understanding amongst themselves as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's very exciting because you've got three players that have already, I guess, formed a bonded, right? Yeah. In Cisco, I mean, it's Tim's, I've worked closely with Tim on a few projects, so I trust his judgment. I doubt the club would have signed someone that they didn't see anything in, and given that they tried to sign him for two windows in a row, I'm sure they've done their homework. He looks light for sure, but it sounds like a loan. Sounds like, I mean, there was that season where Trossard signed and he was great, and then he bulked up, didn't he? Yeah. And now I'd say he's one of the key players. Oh, my daughter's just coming to join me. Hello, just say hello.
Hello.
Darling, I'm just on the interview. Can I consult you in a second? Oh, no, I'll come and see you in a second, maybe, okay? That's all right. Now I've got to give that back to the band tomorrow. I'll be with 10 minutes, darling, okay? You've got a bit of editing to do here, Russell.
That's all right, that's okay.
Darling, can I, hang on, I'll just pause you a sec. Darling, can I come and see you in 10 minutes, okay? Why have I scribbled that? Because I've got to give it to a delivery man tomorrow. Why? Because that's my old phone and they need to have it back. Go and see Grandma, darling.
That's all right. We can do a bit of editing on that one.
Yeah, sorry about that. I'll pick it up. Yeah, I mean, I've known Tim for a long time, worked with him closely on things like Kaiser, and I very much trust his judgment, but I doubt the club would have signed someone that they didn't believe in. And look, I mean, he looks like he can score the goals. I think his analysis was very much along the lines of, he's slight, he's young, he needs to bulk up, but obviously the Paraguayan league is not the Premier League. Yeah. The Ecuadorian league is higher, you know, obviously the Argentine league's very strong. But yeah, I mean, look at, you know, in terms of being slight, look at the likes of Trossard. He went from, you know, signing quite small, petite, to really bulking up, like getting some real muscle on him. And now it's hard to get him off the ball, isn't it? It's and he's now becoming a key part of that Belgian national side. Like, did you see his goal, by the way, a couple of weeks ago?
I haven't actually. I haven't tracked it down yet. I need to look into that. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Was it
against Poland?
Oh, Poland. Yeah.
Poland. Yeah. I mean, absolute screamer, and it cuts to Eden Hazard afterwards, and he's in astonishment about how good the goal is. So you know, I think bulking up is probably not so much the issue. It's probably just mentality and all the rest of it, but. I mean, crazy scenes, though. I mean, you saw he was on the Paraguayan version of Loose Women and had 24-hour rolling coverage from the signing and all the rest of it. It was kind of amazing to watch.
Wow.
Really, you know.
Yeah. yeah, we look forward to seeing him in due course. As I said, a transitional season is always what Tim likes to see with South American players coming to Europe anyway, isn't it? If they're going to come to England. So we'll see what transpires on that one. But yeah, I mean, that pretty much sums up for today. Only thing just to quickly mention again, so the film is called Croatia, Defining a Nation, isn't it? And it is available on FIFA Plus, the app. And people can look it up. We'll put the link out on our Twitter feed and also on our episode notes on this. So look it up, check it out. It's definitely worth a go. It's a great film, and congratulations on it, Louis.
Thank you very much.
Superb. Yeah. So thank you very much for joining us again. We'll no doubt get you back at some point, which will be great. But in the meantime, stand or fall, up the Albion.
Sports Social Podcast Network.